heteronormativity, the assumption that heterosexuality is the only normal and natural expression of sexuality. Unaware of the impact of their words, straight people are at once appropriating and delegitimizing queer culture.
Heteronormativity, a very modern word, but it was very strong in those days. We had lots of secrecy, criminality of male-to-male sex.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Band Pride dodges cops in Istanbul. Is your cultural appreciation appropriate? And Sydney's March Melee Remembrance rallies for the future. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Lucia Chappell.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 7th, 2018. Queer Pride continues to be celebrated around the world. Nowhere was that more significant this week than Istanbul. An estimated 1,000 Pride celebrants rallied in defiance of an official government ban, and police responded with an assault that included the use of dogs, tear gas, and rubber bullets. Amnesty International counted at least 11 arrests. The July 1st rally was an attempt to circumvent a fourth straight parade ban issued by Istanbul's governor for security reasons. Activists assembled on a side street near Taksim Square, a popular upscale local and tourist destination. They unfurled rainbow banners and read a media statement before police closed in to disperse the crowd. Dozens of activists zigzagged through side streets in a cat-and-mouse game with police to avoid arrest, or worse. The organizer's statement read, "Our marches went on peacefully without being banned for 13 years. We LGBTI people are here with our pride despite all vain attempts to prevent us, and we do not recognize this ban." In the days before Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan took power, Istanbul hosted hundreds of thousands of people in what was arguably the largest LGBTQ pride parade in the Muslim world. Consensual same-gender sex is still not illegal in Turkey, but sexual and gender-variant minorities face rampant discrimination, social stigma, and violence.
The King of Swaziland, the continent's lone remaining absolute monarchy, changed the name of his country to Eswatini just 2 months before the Southern African country hosted its first ever LGBTQ Pride March. About 500 people braved death threats to parade through the capital of Mbabane on June 30th. A full-page ad in the Sunday Observer a week before accused organizers of promoting pedophilia and bestiality. Same-gender lovemaking in Eswatini is against the law, and King Mswati III has reportedly called LGBTQ people satanic. Meluse Simelane of the national queer advocacy group The Rock of Hope told reporters before the event that they would not be deterred. "This is the first event of its kind, our first opportunity to show our faces to the world and to our country," Simelane said. "I am not scared." Happily, there was no visible opposition to the march. One participant described it as a beautiful, colorful parade that was literally exploding with joy. Marchers waved rainbow flags and held rainbow banners up high. Many wore t-shirts printed with the message, "God is love."
Marchers at the Pride Parade in Manila were greeted by members of the Church of Freedom in Christ Ministries carrying signs that read, "I'm sorry Christians have shunned you. Jesus didn't turn people away, neither do we. And can we hug you?" Thousands of celebrants braved some anti-queer protesters and heavy rain to parade with pride on June 30th. Police estimated the crowd at about 7,000 people. Agence France-Presse reported many were dressed in drag or in Mardi Gras-like costumes, most waving rainbow flags and flying rainbow balloons. The political message of the march was a demand for marriage equality, but most activists acknowledged that it would be an uphill battle in the socially conservative, predominantly Roman Catholic country where both abortion and divorce are illegal. The march came just a few days after the Philippine Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a lawsuit challenging the Southeast Asian nation's heterosexuals-only definition of marriage. According to recent opinion polls, some 61% of respondents oppose marriage equality.
The annual Pride Parade in London got off to a bumpy start on July 7th, when a small contingent of women carrying banners reading "Trans Activism Erases Lesbianism" and handing out anti-trans leaflets unexpectedly led off the march. It was supposed to be headed by London Mayor Sadiq Khan and representatives of the National Health Service in honor of the agency's 70th anniversary. The anti-trans demonstrators first blocked the start of the parade by lying on the ground until police convinced them to get up and move. Pride organizers first blamed the 10-person contingent marching first on the hot weather. "We do not condone their approach and message," a statement subsequently read, "and hope the actions of a very small number of people does not overshadow the messages of the 30,000 people marching today." Khan and a number of other politicians issued statements criticizing what the mayor called unacceptable transphobia. On a more positive note, while other branches of the British Armed Forces have celebrated Pride for the past decade, the elite Royal Marines marched this year for the first time.
Thousands marched through the Old Town area of Panama City on June 30th to cap off a week of Pride events that included lectures, concerts, and art exhibits. World Pride Panama organizers proclaimed the motto of the parade to be, "If there is love, there is a family." As it is in many Pride marches around the world, one of the more popular contingents was Panama's PFLAG, which in their case stands for Parents, Relatives, and Friends for Diversity. President Miriam Sanchez is the group's president, who founded Panama's PFLAG in 2004 after her daughter came out to her. Sanchez told local media, "I am proud of all the young people of diversity because they are good, hardworking, and talented." Activists noted that this was the first Pride march since the Inter-American Court of Human Rights ordered marriage equality throughout the region earlier this year. That decision bolstered lawsuits by three same-gender couples currently challenging the government's refusal to open civil marriage to them.
Organizers counted some 18,000 equality supporters celebrating historic marriage equality rulings by two different judges in Ecuador, just hours before that annual Pride March kicked off on July 3rd in the capital city of Quito. Each judge cited the January Inter-American Court of Human Rights order as the basis for their ruling. Social prejudices against sexual and gender-variant people prevail in the tiny conservative South American nation. One man had "I am not your joke" painted across his chest. Others carried a banner that read, "I do not want to die for being trans." Many marchers chanted, "Nobody gets tired of diversity." The government is appealing the marriage equality rulings, even though most observers believe the Inter-American Court's ruling will ultimately require it. The appeals court has already rejected the government's request for a stay of the original rulings and ordered the civil registry to issue marriage licenses to the two couples involved in the lawsuits as soon as the original decisions are officially published.
In other news, the British lesbian identified in court documents as QT has won a final victory in her roller coaster effort in Hong Kong to be granted a spousal visa to reside with her wife, identified as SS, and work permanently in the city. The landmark unanimous July 4th ruling by the Court of Final Appeal should pave the way for other legally united expatriate spouses of lesbian and gay Hong Kong residents to get the same dependent visas automatically granted to heterosexual spouses. Goldman Sachs and Credit Suisse were among more than 30 financial institutions and major law firms with offices in Hong Kong that supported the lesbian couple as their case moved up the judicial ladder. The five justices ultimately decided that it was counterproductive for the Immigration Department to encourage workers to come to the city and then deny dependent visas for the spouses of same-gender partners.
Speaking of roller coasters, the government of Bermuda can now claim the undisputed title as the world's leading opponent of marriage equality. Home Affairs Minister Walton Brown confirmed on July 5th that his government is challenging in the Court of Appeal a June ruling by the Supreme Court that ruled for the second time that civil marriage should be opened on the Caribbean island to same-gender couples. The same court first ordered marriage equality in May 2017, but soon after elections swept a more conservative government into power, religious fundamentalists pressured lawmakers into passing a bill overturning that decision in December and creating domestic partnerships instead for those couples. Another lawsuit challenged that move, with Chief Justice Ian Kowale ruling on June 6th, again, that unequal treatment of same-gender couples violates Bermuda's constitution. Out Bermuda led a chorus of queer and human rights groups to condemn the latest government move. "We will never surrender equality for all Bermudians," a statement read, "especially the LGBTQ families and couples who deserve it."
And finally, Paul LePage of the U.S. state of Maine won the dubious distinction this week of being the only governor to ever veto a bill banning so-called conversion therapy for minors. Governors of both major parties in 13 other states have signed similar legislation. In his veto message, the far-right Republican LePage claimed that the bill's enactment could be interpreted as a threat to religious liberty. Demanding that Maine lawmakers override the veto, Marty Rouse of the Human Rights Campaign called the governor's action shameful and described the medically debunked efforts to make queer kids straight nothing less than child abuse.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending July 7th, 2018. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the all-new thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Lucia Chappelle.
Recently, we have won marriage equality, but there are more issues facing our community today.
What happened and what's ahead down under later in the program. But first...
Now gather round and listen to this tale I'm about to tell. And by the end, you'll know how to be racist real well. Just take the things minorities usually must defend. Now filter it on Instagram and turn it to a trend. Cultural appropriation feeds into racism. Cultural appropriation. Nerds having street cred.
Cultural appropriation.
Blondes who dye their hair red.
Cultural appropriation.
Italians cooking sushi.
Cultural appropriation.
Atheists with Christmas trees.
Cultural appropriation.
Are those really examples of cultural appropriation?
Anything can be cultural appropriation depending on the internet outrage cycle.
So how do we fix the problem?
I don't care anymore. I'm just very tired.
Gay comedian Kevin Yee's lighthearted look at a sensitive issue is a brave move, and even he's tired. It's been a challenge for British LGBTQ activists in Birmingham, where a contingent in the Pride Parade wearing Native American headdresses were called out for cultural appropriation. Critics of the costumes charged that the group was exacerbating their own privilege by being unable to differentiate between cultural appreciation and cultural ignorance. They called for a ban on cultural appropriation at Pride events, but how do you define it? The Outcasting Overtime crew takes a crack at explaining it in queer rather than in racial terms, but the same basic principles apply.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Dhruv, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Andrea talks about the appropriation of LGBTQ culture, or how straight people trivialize queerness and the spaces and communities surrounding it. This can be either intentional or unintentional, through the use of certain words or phrases, or through direct invasion of spaces designated specifically for the LGBTQ community. While allies are welcome in the community, they should be aware of their role in the movement and should not try to use it for their own personal benefit or to appear trendy or cool. Outcaster Becca provides a cameo.
Yeah, so excited to go to Pride this weekend with my girlfriends. Just some gal pals ready to party. We kissed once, but that was just to impress this totally hot guy. I could never do that with a girl. Oh my God.
We, LGBT people, are tired of hearing this. Some people say things like this without even realizing that there's anything wrong with it. But, regardless of intent, phrases like these undermine the legitimacy of our hard-won community. Let's break apart what's wrong with the phrases you just heard. They make references to many LGBT ideas and images, but that's not the real problem. Rather than speaking of these ideas in terms of the actual LGBT community, It uses them to express aversion, even disgust, towards the idea of being LGBT. Terms like gal pals trivialize queer relationships. A straight woman referring to female friends as girlfriends otherizes the idea of being queer. Women in particular often use romantic terms to refer to other women and assume that they will be interpreted platonically. This perpetuates heteronormativity, the assumption that heterosexuality is the only normal and natural expression of sexuality. Men can be even more restrictive in this belief. Many people use slang like yas without having any idea where it comes from. The expression originated from the queer people of color community, but it is now commonplace in popular culture. Unaware of the impact of their words, straight people are at once appropriating and delegitimizing queer culture. Unfortunately, sometimes our culture becomes more popular than acceptance of us. Popular culture can capitalize off of the fun that we have while ignoring our humanity and the hardship we face. For example, the stereotype of a gay best friend reduces queerness to a mere personality and a form of entertainment, rather than a sexuality or an important part of self-identification that can be difficult to accept. Straight people do more than repeat problematic phrases. Some of the biggest problems and annoyances faced by the LGBT community have to do with invasion of our space. When did Pride, a historically significant event celebrating LGBT culture and pride, become a party for straight teens? And why do straight women enter gay bars only to get creeped out when women hit on them? We have to keep our spaces for our own because it's already hard enough to find others like us outside of them. Beyond that, it's offensive to treat us as nothing more than a curiosity to gawk at. Straight people aren't unwelcome in the LGBT community. Perhaps more than any other minority group, we hold an important place for our allies. However, there is a difference between being an ally who offers acceptance and support and being someone who taps into our culture only for self-benefit.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to the show. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Hello, I'm Billy Beane, Major League Baseball's Ambassador for Inclusion, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
Back in 1978, Sydney, Australia's gay solidarity group planned a day of events intended to energize queer culture and political activism. They held a traditional march and public meeting in the morning and a nighttime street parade. The violent police response to the parade brought national attention. And that's how Sydney's world-famous gay and lesbian Mardi Gras was born. This Way Out's Barry McKay joined about 100 people commemorating that fateful night.
Out of the box!
In the streets!
Out of the box!
In the streets!
On the evening of the 24th of June this year, a group of LGBTIQ marchers gathered in Sydney's Taylor Square to mark the actual 40th anniversary of the 1978 Mardi Gras and marched down Sydney's Oxford Street in a reenactment of the march to mark the occasion.
Out of the box!
After the march, veteran activist Peter Duval spoke to the marchers to help put the LGBTIQ liberation movement in Australia in historical context and to take a look ahead to the future.
I turned 80 on Monday, so thank you all for coming tonight. I would like to acknowledge the founders of Camp Inc., the Campaign Against Moral Persecution, Christabel Pohl and John Ware. It was 1970 when the first Australian national homosexual rights movement was born, almost 50 years ago now. So I'm looking forward to commemorate the founding of Camp Inc. in 2020. Only two and a half years to go. It will be its 50th birthday when Camp Inc. goes gold. Peter Bonsall Boone, or Bon, and I became a couple in 1966. When our community lived under conditions somewhat similar to those experienced during the Dark Ages. Just to name a few, and there's a very long list, but I won't go through all of them. So we had fear to be ourselves, to come out. Heteronormativity, a very modern word, but it was very strong in those days. We had lots of secrecy, criminality of male-to-male sex. In other words, when Bon and I, if we were having sex, the police could come in and arrest us, charge us, and perhaps go to court and be sentenced to jail for 14 years maximum, just for love. And homosexuality was part of the psychiatric, diagnostic, and statistical manual, which meant that homosexuality was potentially a mental illness for everyone, every homosexual. Aversion therapy, which was rife, fortunately it phased out for a while, but now it's back again. But in the past it was done by the medical profession. Now it is done by religious organizations. There was a general community ignorance and hostility. There was police brutality, and the list goes on and on. Yet, despite all these potential harmful, adverse, and unfavorable conditions, Bon and I became foundation members of Camp Inc. in 1970. Over our almost 50 years of activism, we have experienced many positive changes for our community and consequently for ourselves. I also would like to mention another change pertaining to the annual Mardi Gras parade. Its 40th birthday we're celebrating today. On reflection, for me, the first Mardi Gras parade, now 40 years ago, was in a general sense a lonely event. And we walked down Oxford Street today and I had the same feeling, and I'll come to it why it was. At the time, we were unloved, we were invisible, we were isolated, we were facing insensitivity and ostracized by the general community. The general community was absent at the first parade, like tonight. However, recent Mardi Gras parades have been different and exhilarating experiences, and not just for me, but for the multitude of community spectators welcoming us, affirming the paraders for who we are and what we are. To me, this is indicative of how far we have come. But that's not the case for all our sisters and brothers in the greater Sydney metropolis. Oppression is rife in Western Sydney parts, with all its negative and pervasive attributes, including, no doubt, self-oppression. This lack of communal liberation and acceptance is right on our doorstep in Western Sydney. Recently, we have won a major victory, marriage equality. But there are more issues facing our community today. The so-called religious freedom demands postponed during the federal parliamentary marriage equality debate will resurface again. We as a community need to mobilize to fight these proposed regressive measures. We don't want to go backwards, we want to go forwards. The Marriage Equality Postal Survey results revealed to me that our comrades in Western Sydney pockets are struggling with issues that Bon, I and our community encountered at least 40 or 50 years ago. Within our community, we have transgender and intersex people who have distinct health and human rights issues. We need to lend our voices and action to our innocent refugee sisters and brothers held in detention centres like criminals, and particularly at Nauru and Manus Island. We as a community need to mobilise and lobby the federal government to become proactive about persecutions committed against our tribe in a large number of countries, probably about 60 countries in the world, where gay men like myself can be hung, can be shot. It's absolutely appalling. And the federal government could do something about it. Finally, I'm observing the world moving towards extreme conservatism. Our community needs to bolster our energies towards preserving the liberties we've attained. Look at what is happening in the USA for our rights, in Russia, in Poland, in Hungary, in Austria. It's becoming terribly pervasive. There are other countries as well. So, thank you very much.
Veteran activist Peter Duval addressed the crowd at the reenactment of the 1978 Mardi Gras in Sydney last month. I'm Barry Mackay for This Way Out.
Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from John Dye V and Lucia Chappelle, Outcasters Drew and Andrea, produced by Mark's Office, and by Barry McKay. Kevin Yee and the Tom Robinson Band performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at the all-new thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on CJAM Windsor, Ontario, WRUW Cleveland, Ohio, KSOW Cottage Grove, Oregon, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.